I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers. Here we are, the Seahawks are in the final eight yet again. And it's the same three, as always, on the Pedestrian Podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, Ross Bell, and joining us a little bit later is Adam Nathan. How are we, Ross?
Yeah, good, mate, good. Looking forward to talking about some playoff victory.
Yeah, it's all the excitement and the if buts and maybes are starting to, if this happens, but if they don't do that, maybe. On this week's pod, we will talk over the eventually comfortable, as I predicted last week on the podcast, win over the Lions this past Saturday. Look ahead to the game we all dreaded a week ago on the road in Atlanta, as well as go over what else has happened in the NFL with some true or false, and a quick discussion on the big news, NFL news of the week. On top of all that, we will welcome in another guest here on the Pedestrian Podcast. Before all that, we'll talk about how we ended up here. It's a divisional round of the NFL playoffs, and the Seahawks are yet again still alive. They did that by beating the Detroit Lions 26-6 on Saturday evening. What started typically edgy for the 2016 Seahawks was shot into life with the outstretched, phenomenal grasp of Seahawks number 10, Paul Richardson.
Fourth down and goal. The turn, the play fake, the look, the dump over the top, reaching back. Does he make the catch? Flag is down.
But he
Paul Richardson makes the catch for a touchdown! Seahawks! Holy mackerel! He had a man in his face! What a catch! One hand reaching around the defender, Wilson! And Paul Richardson interfered with and makes the catch with one hand, and the Seahawks go on top 6-0.
A trade of field goals was all we had for the rest of the first half, outside of a 100-yard half from number 34, Thomas Rawls, the O-line doing their end of the bargain just at the right time. The second half stirred into life in the fourth quarter with the defense. More detail coming on that, keeping as much as a lock on the Lions offense as their own receivers' stone hands was doing. But 13-6, that rarest of sights, a walking red zone rushing touchdown for your Seahawks.
Rawls gets it straight ahead. He walks in! Touchdown! Seahawks! Almost untouched, Thomas Rawls. Big hole right side. And that's what you're looking for, a touchdown to put a little distance between the Hawks and the Lions, and Seattle goes on top, 19-6.
The game clearly in hand, and Doug catching passes with his backside. It came to that man, 89, to seal it all, much to the disappointment of his teammate, Jermaine.
Russell awaits a snap. He gets it from Britt. He's going to throw it to the end zone. Got a man! It is caught for a touchdown! Seahawks! Doug Baldwin and Kirsch were running side by side, but it's Doug Baldwin who reaches up and makes the catch. Man, oh man, these receivers are having a game today. Doug Baldwin, holy cow.
Time rolled out. The Seahawks move on in the NFL playoffs. While not perfect, that was much more like those Seahawks we got used to seeing in recent years, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was nice, wasn't it, to see a comfortable victory, playing Seahawks football, dominating on the ground. Defense shut them down. They're, obviously, like you said, their receivers helped us quite a bit by dropping countless passes. But even when they did catch them, they weren't breakaways, and the defense was there to smack them most of the time.
Yeah, there was several examples of other DBs running routes for the receivers, which is always a good sign for Seahawks. But poor old Jermaine, though, eh?
I mean, we did the coaches film in depth, and watching it back, I do feel quite sorry for him now, because this is when he comes to play, and that was a touchdown, that was his catch, and Baldwin openly admitted that he got it wrong, didn't he?
Yeah, like legitimately devastated that he took it off his brother, as they call each other. But elsewhere, it was a strong showing for Rawls, 170 yards, the Seahawks playoff record, obviously the touchdown as well. That was a lot of fun, really, wasn't it?
He's in his second season as a Seahawk, and he's already got more... Well, he's got the record for single-game rushing in a playoff. I think he's ahead of Marshawn Lynch, Sean Alexander. Players of that quality, that's mad.
Yeah, but that's something that's got to continue this week, isn't it?
He needs to get that at least this week to grind that clock and just wear the Falcons down, I think.
Yeah, and obviously the weekly deja vu on the offensive side come from, as we keep saying, number 89... Yet again, 100-yard game. He's just, I can't remember who it was on Twitter, keeps pointing out the similarities with number 89, who used to play for Baltimore, Steve Smith, and that's not a bad name to be in a sentence with, is it, for Baldwin?
That 40-yard catch where he does the man with just one little foot movement, it's so reminiscent of Steve Smith that it's quite scary, actually, and...
Yeah,
everything about him. He's the attitude, the ability. I mean, to be compared to Hall of Fame, well, definitely Hall of Fame wide receiver in my book. That he's on the right path.
If you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, it will be up on our podcast feed and on the Patreon feed as well, Ross.
Yes, definitely.
Me and Ross have dug deep on the offense from Saturday night, and it is one of the plays where you can just hear us openly laugh during it, because when you watch the All-22, he just doesn't even do anything spectacular. He just absolutely leaves his DB for dead yet again. Russell, though, despite the steady stat line, that was a weird game for us. The Richardson throw was bad. He nearly killed Jimmy on an overthrow. Footwork seems a little off, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's looking... I don't know, because this is the first game without the knee brace on, isn't it? And we saw on that downfield block that he's got the speed, but I don't know, something about the way he's throwing. He doesn't look set a lot of the time. He's throwing in awkward angles and awkward positions. And I don't know, I think they say it about Aaron Rodgers that he throws more from his hips than he does his shoulders, which doesn't work for every quarterback. And I don't know, maybe Russ is trying to evolve slightly, but I was quite happy with what he was doing last year, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I mean, the Richardson... one-handed catch in the end zone, that looked like it was tipped, but you watch it back at every angle, it was nowhere near being tipped. It was just a bad, bad throw.
Yeah, it was just a floater to the back of the end zone.
Only a ridiculous play from Paul Richardson.
Yeah.
Boost up the Russell Wilson stat line, but as with Rules, as with Doug, as with everyone this week, it's a case of being sharper, isn't it, this weekend for us?
Yeah, I mean, last week was encouraging. They played as a team, and it was a whole team game. There wasn't one side of the ball dominating more than the other. Arguably, the defense still dominated more than the offense did, even though obviously the scoreline suggests otherwise. But yeah, I think just tidying up a few of those little errors this week, I think we're in with a pretty good shout at this game.
Yeah, it was a pretty impressive way to finish in the fourth quarter. It was two touchdowns and a field goal as well. But yeah, defensively, we did have the 12th man. No, not the fans. It was, as I said earlier, the wide receiver and the tight ends for Lions, their hands. But how good was that from the defense?
Yeah, it was incredible. Tate had three catches, I think, he finished with. One of them he caught, and he turned around and Bobby Wagner was in his face and looking to hit him as hard as possible. If Collinsworth is to be believed, saying that they didn't get on much, Golden Tate and the defensive side of the ball when he was in Seattle. So
yeah. I can see that. I think I can see that. It's what I picked up on with all the Sherman Bevel stuff as well. The defense, if players and the voices of the locker room seem to be in a different radio wave to how the offense, Russ and even the coaches Bevel and Cable compared to Chris Richard, he just. Just have different tone and pitches and way, because Doug Baldwin's just always happy. I mean, he spent 90 seconds of his press conference last week reviewing the new Star Wars film. So it's something I picked up on. So I can see how Gordon take and rub people up the wrong way, because he is just a troll. He's an internet troll in NFL uniform, isn't he? But this defense, though, as we said previously on other podcasts, he's not lauded on like years past, but on Sunday, I mean, this is just a ridiculous couple of stats. DeShawn Shedd and Richard Sherman were targeted, was it 9 times?
Yeah.
I think. And they give up 0 catches and had 9 pass breakups between them on a day where Matt Stafford completed 18 of 32 9 of those passes are broken up by either on both sides of the field. That's something strong, isn't it?
That's mad. Yeah, we know Sherman is the best in the game, but
He was targeted once, Mr. Sherman was on Sunday, and he managed to get a fantasy point if fantasy football existed at this stage of the season.
Really, on his one target.
On his one target, PBU is a fantasy point.
Yeah, he is incredible, and there was that stat we saw earlier in the week about I can't remember Shea's name, Sheila Kapadi, said about the Falcons game earlier in the season that when Sherman covered Julio for 30 of the 46 snaps, Ryan was 3 of 5 for 40 yards. That's covering Julio.
I think there's Sam Monson, PFF, he said he's one of the best shed disses. He's one of the best run defending corners as well.
Yes.
And that's something which is often Sherman's put on a pedestal as well as that. I mean, this could be really interesting what happens with his contract this year, because he's playing like he deserves a maximum deal, but he's possibly going to get a Jeremy Lane deal. Pass rush did just enough. We're not completely taking over the game, but number 55 is a monster in a good way, though, this time, isn't he?
They all are. There is pressure from everywhere. Wagner, when he gets sent on blitzes, terrifies quarterbacks, absolutely terrorises them. And he was a Zach Zenner last-ditch push away from absolutely destroying Matt Stafford on one of these blitzes. But the pressure you're getting from all over, and if you had 55, 56, 72 and 91 pushing an offensive line, that's got to be a nightmare for a quarterback.
Yeah, and also on Sunday with Clark, he started at nose tackle.
Yeah.
As well, he has some snaps. No tackle is just, I mean, if he can continue that, and we've got Bennett around for the next 3-4 years or so,
yeah,
this is going to be fun for the next couple of years. Watching this defensive line continue to grow. One nagging negative from Saturday, though, is the man they still call Money, Hauschka, and the man Nacho wants us to talk about him. So when someone who bakes cakes and wears masks asks, you deliver. So is this one of those years players go through, or is this a concern for his future in Seattle because he is in a contract year?
Well, he seems to be having more trouble with the extra points.
It's weird.
Field goals he's fine with, he seems. To be like, there's not a mental block with that, obviously, apart from taking out Arizona games. But extra points that should be gimmies, basically. Even though they've moved them back slightly for the last 2 years, they're still very easy kicks, I would assume. But, yeah, hitting the upright in this one and I don't know, he's looked dodgy all season, but do you risk getting rid of him? And unless you can get someone like the Lions having Matt Prater, who's money.
That's exactly it. But the thing with Prater, he's played in Denver, which is no air.
Yeah.
And then in the dome. So, with Hauschka, he's someone, I mean, straight away when his name was brought up, Pete Carroll said, he's a good kicker. He's still in the top five all time for accuracy, for field goals and all that. So I think this is just, There's something there which is clearly workable and something to get past. Probably mental, I don't know, technique, who knows.
Well, he's the Seahawks' leading playoff point scorer now after that second
field goal. And he's only 40 behind Norm Johnson for the all-time points. So if he's just sticking around for next year, we could be seeing a record broken not by Thomas Falls next year. So are you concerned that this is it for Hauschka? This could be it on Saturday?
Unless we pull something drastic like a Robert Aguayo pick in the draft, I think we just stick with Hauschka. We know what we've got. I think Pete likes that, the tandem of him and Ryan. They're trusted in what they do. They've not had the best season, but they've fallen from a level of almost greatness. I mean, John Ryan 2 years ago, his punting was off the charts, wasn't it? Out of this world. And Hauschka's, like you say, he's been money for the entire time he's been in Seattle, so we can afford them both a slightly poorer season.
Yeah, most definitely. If the Seahawks do a Roberto Aguayo in the second round of this draft, then I am flying to Seattle and drug testing Schneider, because if they pick a kicker from, well, I think Aguayo's brother might be in this draft actually.
Really?
So if they pick him over someone like, I don't know, Deion Dawkins out of Temple, I am flying straight to Seattle and drug testing them all, because that cannot happen. One to praise on offense that we ever mentioned?
that we haven't mentioned?
This is only one guy for me, I think. It's Mark, someone we picked up on in the film study.
The fullback.
The fullback, yeah. Also, the word motion was quite key in that offensive game plan, quite clearly.
Every
But no, Mark Gawinski was absolutely phenomenal on Saturday. Absolutely fantastic. Him and Britt, double teams, were just opening up half a century length with Bulls and Reese and everything. But yeah, Gawinski, this is... But there's not anything better coming off the top of my head. This is Gawinski's best game in the NFL this past Saturday for me.
I think it was the entire O-line's best game as a Seahawks O-line. I think I tweeted out on Sunday from our account that maybe it does take 16 weeks to figure out the Tom Cable run blocking system, because they look like a Seahawks run blocking line. There are some absolutely massive holes that they're breaking up, and yeah, those three in the middle, we've had our ups and downs with Afedi this season, but he looked decent this time. The only one that's still worries me ever so slightly is the tackles. Fant needs to put on a bit of weight, I think. He gets pushed back a little bit too easy.
And yeah.
Gilliam, we know all about Gilliam and what he can and can't do.
I think the thing with Fant is if you survive the first quarter and a half, 3, maybe 4 drives without anything disastrous like fumble or
third down
sacks and stuff like that, then it's going to improve. He's shown it every week. They keep saying it every week about him, where he doesn't make the same mistake twice. He's learning on the fly kind of thing. So if you can survive, I think he's going to be against Freeney more than Beasley, which we'll get onto later this week. But yeah, that play we highlighted in the film room thing as well, with Gilliam just doesn't even bother looking at the guy he's supposed to be blocking, just lets him. But we still get a 42-yard pass out of it, so... Maybe he knew what was coming. Maybe he's the savant. One to praise on defense.
God, where do you start with that lot? I just think they're all fantastic. But I've said it every week. I'm going to keep saying it this week. Bobby Wagner, he's just the man. And Brandon asked on the Seahawks pod that me and Adam featured on earlier this week, should he be in contention for the MVP this season? And if there is no number one offensive player, I don't think, because obviously Brady missed some games and Rodgers has had a fair few down weeks and Matt Ryan's been a little bit up and down. Wagner should be at least getting some consideration, shouldn't he?
Not for MVP, because defensive player of the year, I think he could win. I don't think he will win. I think we might actually see the guy who's going to win that on Saturday. MVP is always an offensive player. Probably not fair. I mean, JJ Watt didn't win it.
He deserved it, definitely.
An astounding year, even if he is the most grated man in the NFL.
He's 167 tackles this season.
Yep. Defensive player of the year is definitely on the cards, Bobby Wagner. I mean, he got the most votes.
It has to be,
And defensive side for All-Pro last week as well. So,
he's 26 years old.
Yeah, he's got a contract coming up, I think. So I think if this time next year we'll be talking about a new Bobby Wagner deal if this carries on. Because
he's not already the highest paid linebacker, he will be.
No, I think Keekly.
He thought it was the year after, didn't he?
Yeah. But yeah, any other thoughts on the game? Would you make it a fourth down? Because obviously the first one paid off, but 0-0 in the first quarter. It's quite...
I like it. I'm a fan of it. I like the going for it. Like you say, it's 0-0. We're not getting anything to lose at this point. We're not chasing points in a sense that we're not trying to claw back any points. Why not go for it? Especially in the first... Was it the first quarter or the second quarter? We did it first on the 2-yard line. I think it was the second quarter, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All we'd seen from the Lions to that point is they could drop the ball really well. So... they couldn't get 10 yards from their own 25. Let's put them on the 2-yard line. And if we don't get the fourth down conversion, then there we go. They've got 98 yards to try and catch the balls all up and down the field. So I like going for it in that situation. I think it paid off as well, definitely.
Yeah, and you put in a massive amount of well-deserved trust in your defence as well in doing that as well. And it's a 2-yard line. I mean, the Lions went for it before that touchdown drive. on our 40, so
yeah,
or their 40. So it's one of those. But I was all, I really don't mind it. And Pete Carroll was accused of being hormonal, which he not accused of. He admits to being that. But on Saturday night, he was. I completely agree with it. I mean, as I said, there's such a thing as scoreboard pressure, and that's what we saw quite clearly, because Stafford, who's clearly hampered with that finger, just ended up overthrowing receivers like it was Blake Bortles in the fourth quarter on Saturday.
Yeah. It's a shame, really, because Stafford had a really good year up to that point, and it kind of completely derailed his season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know too much about scheming and stuff like that, but they look like a really vanilla team, very predictable on both sides of the ball. I mean, we just kept doing the same run play, all the motions and stuff. We just kept doing the same one, and the same hole was there.
Yeah, their linebackers were closing the
gaps and stuff. just a strange team. But anyway, the Seahawks move on. The date with the Falcons is edging ever closer this weekend. But before that, it's time for this week's guest.
Lynch in the backfield in a pistol formation. Wide receivers to either side. Russell takes the snap, drops back. He's going to throw down the middle. He's got a man. The ball is caught.
Game over, baby.
Touchdown. The game is over. The Seahawks are going back to the Super Bowl in Glendale. What a catch in the end zone. It is curse. 35 yards. A long day for Jermaine. And he makes the game-winning reception in the end zone. They are going nuts at CenturyLink.
Now, this for me is quite a cool coup for this infant-aged podcast. William Cornell is a name you may not be aware of, but the work he's put in over the past 4 or 5 years or so is. William is the man who sources, edits, and puts his name on the fantastic goosebump-inducing series of films entitled Rain City Redemption, and latterly released just last week, The Rain City Miracle, chronicling that unlikeliest of unlikely W's versus the Packers 2 years ago in the AFC Championship game. So welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, Will.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
No problem. We really appreciate you taking time out of your day. Obviously, the time difference is probably a bit of a killer.
No, I'm actually just getting on my lunch break now, so this is perfect.
Nice, cool. So how's the last week been? Because about a week ago, we were recording just as you dropped the Rain City Miracle, and trolling through Twitter post-recording was just absolutely effusive praise, all of it aimed at you. It must be cool experience once that clock hit the release time last week.
Yeah, it's been a good experience. I was really curious to see how this one would do, just because the concept was a little bit different than the ones previous to it, but it seems to be, you know, taken pretty well, and yeah, it's been, you know, it's been cool like all the rest.
Just for those that may not know what this series is, just give us a brief background on what you've done in the past and what this video is all about.
Well, what it is, it's a video series that basically documents and highlights how Pete Carroll turned things around, as well as Josh Schneider, and it's just kind of the story about how the Seahawks came to where they are now, and that's basically it. It's kind of tailored to take you back through the moments and emotions that we felt as fans, and been doing it for, I think it's 4 years now, so it starts with the 2010 season when Pete Carroll was first here, and then up until the latest one, which was 2014.
So cool. So before we get to more chat on the video series and all that, I just want to give a quick background on yourself outside of the series and your Seahawks fandom in particular.
Yeah, I became a Seahawks fan, I want to say. I mean, I was always watching as a kid, but I didn't really understand what was going on, just because football is kind of a little complicated in comparison to other sports like baseball and basketball. But when I was, first time I say I would really, you know, consider myself a fan was right around probably sixth or seventh grade. I think it was that 2003 season when we played the Green Bay Packers, the famous we want the ball, we're going to score a year with Matt Hasselbeck. So, you know, right around like beginning of 2000s, early 2000s is when I became a fan. As far as, you know, I've grown up in Seattle my whole life. As far as what I do outside of, you know, being a full-time Seahawks fan is a graphic designer and music producer as well. So it's kind of a little bit about me.
Oh, cool. So where did the idea come to start chronicling this team and this organisation and this, obviously Schneider Carroll? Where did that come from, all the way up to Super Bowl 48, obviously?
Well, I'll try to keep it short. I tend to kind of ramble about this because I get asked it pretty often, and I'm known to kind of go on for a bit, but I'll keep it short.
It's better than listening to us, Will. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Talk away.
Well, I appreciate you guys. Well, to be honest with you, it was around 2000. I want to say it was like 2012. I was on YouTube, and I stumbled across a video that a 49ers fan had made, and it was like 20 minutes. And it was about the Alex Smith story in the year they beat the Saints in the playoffs. And I don't know what they ended up doing. I think they ended up losing later in the playoffs. But it was a great video, the way this fan had put things together. And it was so emotional. And like this, I mean, even me, I mean, I'm a diehard Seahawks fan. So naturally, I hate the San Francisco 49ers. And even me, I was sitting there kind of emotional, just like, wow, this is, you know, really well put together. And yeah. I was kind of thinking after watching it, it'd be cool if we had someone that did something like this for our team, but the problem was I didn't have any video editing experience. I'd never touched the stuff. So a couple months went by, and of course, you guys know how things turned out once Russell Wilson got here. The story had been so great. Everybody had doubted Pete Carroll. Everyone doubted Russell Wilson. You know, it wasn't going to work, and it just seemed to be a lot of criticism coming from the media, so the story naturally was great. And I just kind of decided after it was the Patriots game in week 6 of 2012 that I just decided, you know, might as well just take a shot at it. And, you know, the only way this is going to happen is if someone does it. So if I have to be the one, so be it. And I basically got a version of Adobe Premiere and got started. And that the rest is kind of history.
Cool.
So I love this video. Well, this, I guess you can call it a movie or a film, because of the length of it. And I really like the way that, so for those that haven't watched it yet, A, get on it straight away and do watch it. But it's the NFC Championship game against Green Bay, and interspersed, you've got clips of the season. So it starts with the first quarter of Green Bay, and then you may go back to the first game against Green Bay of that season. It was interesting listening to you on the Seahawkers podcast discussing how many sort of comparisons you can make between 1 year, you know, the first quarter and that first game of the year. How many sort of like light bulb moments do you have when you're trying to put it together and just think, oh, thank goodness for that, that fits so well? Just let us into the process of that.
Well, it's great when it happens. I don't really have a term for it, but it's always a good feeling when, you know, stuff like that kind of comes together, and you kind of play with a couple ideas here and there, and then the ones that hit are, you know, always the best. As I kind of mentioned on last week's talk, I knew I needed to do something different for this episode, because I felt that if I had done it, since it was a single game, I knew that if I did it in chronological order, it would kind of be boring, and it just couldn't have been done in chronological order and have the same effect. So I, you know, it kind of just clicked. I kind of thought about it, and I go, wow, you know, that game, that Packers game in the NFC Championship had so many parallels with how the season went. It started off great. Richard Sherman interception at the beginning of the game. You know, the year started off great. Win over the Denver Broncos, win over the Green Bay Packers in week one. And then we went through a rut. I think the NFC Championship game was kind of a longer and more severe rut than the seasons, but all it being the same, it started off great, kind of went into a low, and then we turned things around. And, I don't know. It just kind of came to me, and I ran with it, and I think it worked out.
Yeah, for sure. But obviously it is quite a cool full circle with the role this stage game versus the Falcons played in this team's ascension, obviously in making this series as well. It's all come back around. Here we are again, two days out from the Falcons. It's quite cool that it's come back around like this, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I'm really hoping for a win this Saturday. I think we can do it, but yeah, it is interesting. I was actually kind of thinking that the other day, how we've come full circle from 2012, you know, just playing them and, you know, playing them again in a divisional game.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Stu, obviously it's a great way to document a game and document a season, but there's just moments of it that just add so much texture to the video and context and sort of a human element. And the bit that really stuck out for me was after John Ryan throws the touchdown for, after the fake field goal, he does the wrestling belt thing to Aaron Rodgers.
Just double check.
And I guess for you, it's important that you're obviously trying to tell a story, but little moments like that. I mean, the Super Bowl 48, my favorite moment, this sounds weird, is when the after the safety, they're coming off and Champ Bailey's saying, oh, don't worry, we'll spot them too. And you're thinking, oh, that's going to come back to bite you in the ass later on in the game. So how much of it is sort of telling a story and how much of it is finding those little moments, like with Wilson and Lynch on the sidelines talking about the wheel route?
It's just a combination of both. You try to mix a little entertainment, and I'm totally on board with you. I love those little subtleties. I kind of wish that I could add more, but I can only use what I can, whatever I can find. I don't really have like access to any sort of database with infinite amount of sideline footage, but I really do like those subtleties. Like even one of my favorites is going back to that, the last episode, the Super Bowl episode where Marshawn Lynch goes up to Pete Carroll after they score and he goes, can we score more points? That's one of my favorite. And just little subtleties like that make for a more entertaining experience. And it gives people, for everyone that doesn't watch those sound effects episodes, it kind of gives people an insight to, what the players are saying at the time. So I personally, I love them.
Yeah, not just this one around the Packers game, but go back and watch the other ones. It really does give a different level of appreciation, if that's possible, on Marshall Lynch, doesn't it? And how much totally missing. Does.
And there's footage that I have of going back to this latest episode that wasn't actually in there, but he's just there's some great moments that I've got just in my footage folder, just with him talking on the sideline with Ricardo Lockett and. There's another one of him talking with Sherman. I just love those subtleties.
Yeah, Adam?
I was, it's funny watching through and you sort of, when you condense a season into an hour and a half, you sort of find characters in it that you end up liking more or disliking more. And someone like Rich Eisen, just watching his, how he was opening news segments during the show, it was quite funny how, are they finished and Sleepless in Seattle, something like that. With players and individuals, do you find yourself sort of warming and softening to people as you're editing the stuff just because you're seeing so much footage?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a lot of that sideline stuff. You kind of see a little bit more into what these guys are like, how these guys are like as people. Because, you can watch press conferences, you can watch all this stuff, but at the end of the day, it's all kind of sports talk. But when it's on the sideline and it's like after a big moment, you really see that they're not just sports robots, they're human beings. And you kind of get an insight into who they are as people more than you do at like a radio interview, TV appearance, stuff like that. But definitely, I would say that this last episode definitely, I sympathize a little bit more with Jermaine Kearse now after having made that episode than I did at the beginning of this year, for example.
Yeah, he's someone who's quite often mentioned on our podcast, not the most glowing of terms, but it is, I think as you said on the Seahawks last week, it is a redemption for him, isn't it? During that game, obviously all the interceptions come thrown his way, then it all comes down to that crescendo at the end with the overtime.
I know, you'd think that it was like it was written by Hollywood or something, but it's real life, which makes it so insane. But it's just incredible that that little mini redemption. It's almost kind of like, to me, there was some similarities between his redemption in that game as well as Percy Harvin's in the Super Bowl, how he finally took that run back. I kind of loved that story as well. So, it's like kind of like almost little mini redemptions within themselves and in the players.
Yeah, so obviously through the process of making all these films, is how you watch the games every week, is that changed? Or do you watch it for a different lens, so to speak, or
I watch it just the same, but I definitely, there will be some moments where I'll think to myself, wow, that this will be great if I end up making an episode of this. So you're kind of looking for stuff like that, but for the most part I watch like any other fan for the most part.
Yeah, Adam,
I feel like this team, there's something about it that we've won a Super Bowl and 43-8. That seems like a domination. And we got back to another Super Bowl. And then the last 2 years, it's just amazing how tumultuous every Seahawks season seems to be. You know, the Patriots just seem to stroll through seasons and end up in a Super Bowl. And even Dallas this year have had like basically zero setbacks and just strolled their way here. I imagine that adds a lot of interest. And when you're cutting it and editing it, it must almost be quite emotional just seeing the roller coaster that this team seems to go on every year.
Well, it makes it a lot better, that's for sure. You know, when you're winning so much better once you've gone through the adversity of losing, or, I mean, like you said, just the adversity of a year. I almost think that sometimes it must be boring to be a Patriots fan. Like, they're so good, it's boring. But you're right. The Seahawks have never really made it easy on us. Even when they won the Super Bowl that year, there were games like the Tampa Bay game, that Rams game on the road that got down to the 1 yard line, I think it was. So, you know, it's never, you're right, we never seem to just coat and blow over our opponents. It's always got to be some sort of interesting element to these seasons.
Yeah, so obviously how long does the process take of getting all the clips and all the music? Obviously the clips obviously I'm guessing come first before the music, but is that a rolling process we just watch and then all the way up to completion, or
as far as footage gathering goes and just the finding the music for it?
Yeah.
It's on that actually, I think, takes longer than the video editing itself, believe it or not, because you're looking for very specific things, at least for me. I've kind of mentioned it before, when you're trying to put together a theme or a feeling, I guess, you know, like I always kind of, just as a good example, when I was putting together the preseason of this episode, you kind of have to take fans back to what we were feeling. And I remember the resounding feeling amongst this fan base was, you know, we just won the Super Bowl, we didn't lose a lot of guys, and we're on our way to repeat, and there was a lot of hype. So you have to find videos tailored to that emotion, if that makes any sense. So it takes a lot of time to just find the right ones, and you got to watch each individual video in its entirety, because you got to get sound bites that also go along with that theme. So the footage, you know, search, and especially the music search, that takes, I think it probably takes longer than the editing itself.
Yes. Adam?
Do you have a particular favorite game from that season that may not stand out like the Packers game? I mean, Stuart and I were both, funnily enough, at the Oakland Raiders game, which features quite heavily in the video as one that sort of the Seahawks' identity really changed back to ground and pound and good defense, although it was a bit shaky at the end. I mean, is there a game that particularly resonates with you as you're rewatching it outside of the main event per se?
Yeah, I would say the Broncos game was a good one, and I'd probably go with the Cardinals game, the one that finished the year. Well, it wasn't the last game of the year, but it was the Beastquake 2 game. The one thing I do, and I kind of said this earlier last week, one thing I do regret about this episode was not including more highlights from that game, because it was just an absolute domination just on every level, and I didn't have enough real estate on the music I was choosing to include everything. But I think that game was probably the best from that year.
Yeah, I'll echo what Adam said. The Raiders game is the coolest, because obviously it's the first time I've made a trip out there, and has one of my all-time favourite Seahawks plays with Irvin's pick six, which is it's just an unbelievable bit of athleticism. Yeah. And that's just, so it was quite cool seeing that in the film. Adam?
Did I hear on last week's episode that you get some people complaining at you when an episode's too long?
Yeah, it's not a lot of people, but when the last one came out, it was 2 hours, and there was a couple people that I just, because I always like to read the comments and see what people are thinking. And I always say hi to people and thank them, at least try my best to, at least. And I, when the last one came out, there were some people that were just saying it was way too long, and they couldn't they couldn't sit through the whole thing. And I guess, you know, I understand it. I mean, the internet's so much of, the internet always says, like, you know, it's perfect for people with ADD, because you're just, you know, it's 10 seconds here, 10 seconds there, and you're going to the next thing. And so I get it. But I think, as I said in last week's talk, I prefer them to be longer because I think it gives more opportunity to build a story. But, you know, like I said, that's just me.
Yeah, I won't often speak for an entire nation, but on behalf of the United Kingdom, I can say that if the next one is 6 hours long, I'll ask for 7 hours. So don't worry about that from us.
Yeah, there's so
that might be a little mark.
Yeah, the game for the Packers was pretty cool for a few the UK Seahawks fans. There was a few of them over there at the game. They often bring it up in conversation.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So have you had any player feedback or interaction over the course of the last few years with all the films? Or?
Well, I know that Michael Robinson shared it a while ago. He actually made a post about it on Facebook, and he was just basically saying that it was a great series for fans and everybody should check it out. And then also Doug Baldwin shared that Super Bowl episode trailer that came out a couple of years ago. Doug Baldwin shared on Twitter. But aside from that, I really haven't heard much from the organization.
No, is there plans for another film? Is it a case to see what the next month brings and see how the lay of the land?
I'm sorry, you can't break it up.
Is there plans for another film, or is it just a case to see what the next month brings?
Well, for the next big one, yeah, I kind of just have to wait for another story, for another another big episode. But I'm really thinking about doing a Marshawn Lynch tribute video, maybe like 30-minute, 45-minute Marshawn Lynch career highlights thing, where it kind of highlights not only his play on the field, but also who he was as a person. So I've already started to kind of, actually, it was about 6 months ago I started collecting footage for that. So I kind of have a head start on that. But as far as, nothing in stone yet.
No. Yeah, I could never say this enough, but especially watching your video, and I felt it this season just a little bit, that there's been a spark missing, and I just miss him so much. Just everything about him as a guy, as a player, he really was the real heart of the franchise, and I think that some of the teething problems this year can be attributed to just not having a guy like that around.
I totally agree. He was they always say a generational player. He was one of a kind in so many ways, not just how he ran, but like you said, who he was as a person. And I agree to some extent. I think that, you just look at some of the games in the past, we'd be down and then he'd have a big run and it would just light the sideline up. And we just don't really see that as much anymore, but I'm pretty confident, with Thomas Rawls and who we got, on our team now. Not that they're the same by any means, but I think they're good players. And it's kind of too bad, not to go on a side note, but I saw that TJ Proceis wasn't going to be in this week. That's kind of disappointing.
Yeah,
he's just as doubtful, I think. I think I can talk for Adam, who we've kind of had mirror thoughts the last few weeks of the season, where it's just kind of ground us down. So watching obviously, the film last Thursday night, Friday morning was just to pick me up. I needed, personally, just to get a little bit of the blood pumping ready for the playoffs, because this has been a bit of gnarly is the word I always keep using for this season, though, hasn't it? So to watch that, to relive all that, and relive that amazing game against the Packers was just to pick me up. I needed anyway, so before the Lions.
Perfect.
Yeah, absolutely spot on.
Couldn't have timed it any better.
No. So if anyone listening has somehow missed all of your great work, where can people find it and find you to talk about the Super Bowl run and that Packers game with you on Twitter and Vimeo?
Yeah, so on Twitter, it's just Rain City Series. And Facebook, you probably just type in Rain City Redemption. And that page should come up, and I'm pretty active on there, as am I on Twitter. And then as far as the video series itself, do you guys get it over there on YouTube? Because it was banned in the U.S., but that's all it said, but I haven't checked. Can you guys get it on YouTube?
I've only watched them on Vimeo, however you say it.
Yeah, Vimeo, watched it. I downloaded the app and watched it on there.
Okay. Yeah, you guys actually might have it on YouTube, too. But usually if you just type in Rain City Redemption on Google, it should bring up the Vimeo page. But, for those, if you actually want the actual address, it's vimeo.com/William Cornell, my name. So pretty easy to find, and I'm pretty active with everybody. So if anyone out there wants to, talk about, they're just, message me or whatever, I'm always free.
Cool. Massively appreciate your time and coming on talking about all of it to us from across the pond. Next time we're out in Seattle, the man is on Adam, by the way. Yeah.
You can have more than one Manny's on me after the hard work you put in. I've just followed you on Twitter, so no doubt I can send some ramblings through on Saturday night after a magnificent win.
So you guys are Manny's fans, huh?
Yeah.
That works out perfect for me. That's actually my drink of choice.
Ideal. if you go to the Lodge Bar next to King Street Bar and Grill, just by the stadium, you'll see the UK Seahawk flag flying high, the Union Jack in Seahawk colours. So go in there, we'll meet you in there next year for sure.
Hey, definitely make sure to get a hold of me before you guys come. I'd be honored to meet you. You know, I can't thank you guys enough for having me on. It's kind of cool, you know, thinking back. This kind of started all as an experiment of sorts in Eugene, Oregon, in a library room. And, you know, to be talking with you guys is an honor. So, you know, thank you guys again.
Cheers, Will.
Thanks, Will. Keep well.
Yep. So, yeah, now it's into the belly of the beast of the best offense the NFL has seen in about a decade. Earl Thomas on two legs would be really helpful right now, wouldn't it, guys?
Well, best offense has seen since we blew the last best offense out in the Super Bowl. Yeah.
That's very true. It's also, as Pete Carroll put it, this is the most challenging team they've faced since the last time they faced this team. So yeah, but Earl Thomas is a big loss in this game with how they attack with play action and all that, isn't he, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, without Gronkowski being healthy for the Patriots, this is probably, well, unless you've got the Steelers in the Super Bowl, this is probably going to be the time it's going to be tested the most, having a bit of trouble in the safety positions. So, yeah, I guess, look, to be the best, you got to beat the best without getting too cliched, despite just dropping the biggest cliche of all time.
It's a Bret Hart, isn't it?
I guess this is going to be the one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's some hill to climb on Saturday, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, I'm not as worried as you two for some reason. I don't know why. The Falcons don't win in the playoffs. Russell Wilson's got more wins than the entire Falcons franchise in their history has in the playoffs. Come on, boys.
Yeah, but as the conversation goes, as the phrase goes, this ain't your dad's Falcons, you ain't your granddad's Falcons. Yeah. These are a different breed, these Falcons are.
Yeah, they've had a week off, sometimes that bye week doesn't play into their favour.
Yeah, and also the sort of short week on a travel day as well. Obviously it's Saturday, so it's not too bad, but you still got to travel. Saturday, hill to climb, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're definitely a beatable team because they are a flawed side in many areas. The issue is that you can pretty much bank on them scoring 30 points one way or another. If not 30, then let's set the over-under at 24. You would never be taking the under on them scoring 24 points at home. So it feels very much like that Patriots game, which I remember watching with a couple of friends in Seattle and saying, we're going to need 30 to win this game, and sort of getting laughed at. But that is true. And this feels like the only other time this year that that's been the case. We need 30 to win this game. So basically it's, do you think this team's good enough to get it or don't you? I basically think is the crux of the argument here.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd also, pat on the back, Adam, for not name-dropping there when the game, your friends you watched the Patriots game with. But Matt Ryan, who's just shy of a 5,000-yard season, 38 touchdowns, just 7 interceptions. That's pretty damn impressive, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, it does help throwing to someone like Julio Jones who never drops the ball. That's much more favourable than some quarterbacks have to throw the ball to.
Yeah, I mean, Julio Jones is top 3 wide receiver in the league.
He's number one for me.
I know who Adam's going to say number one.
He'd be third behind Beckham and Brown for me.
Yeah, I'd possibly put him 2 ahead of Beckham because I think he's just, yeah, he just jumped, as Ross said, just out jumps everything. But Kyle Shanahan, he's massively touted for head coaching jobs. He might end up in the NFC West next season. All the play-action passes all helps, really, doesn't it? Get Julio the room and get Matt Ryan the yards, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I've said before that he's probably my favourite. He runs my favourite style of offence, that, you know, pass-catching running backs, a lot of play-action, and just downfield shots. I mean, to be honest, if he wants to come to the NFC West, he can have Jared Goff running play-action whatever he wants. It's not going to make a blind bit of difference with that idiot. looking a bit more long-term. But yeah, I mean, I think they've been great to watch, and you know, you and I are often talking on a Sunday, and I think it's almost like one of those teams where we're not, it's not like we're playing the Packers or the 49ers who you hate. Like, I think both of us, I'm not sure about yourself, Ross, but I think we both quite like the Falcons this year.
Yeah,
I do. I like Dan Quinn. I want him to do well.
It's also something, as I said in our group chat on WhatsApp, Adam, that it also appears, you said a few weeks ago that the Patriots might be the franchise and team and set up that this team respects the most, the Falcons, and they've showed it with all the sentiments and comments and quotes they come out with this week. The Falcons are running them close. Obviously, it helps with Dan Quinn being in that building, but this is a pre-Dan Quinn thing with Matt Ryan before, I think probably before Russell Wilson was a Seahawk as well. So, I really, really do enjoy watching this team. So, hopefully just not too much on Saturday. So, once you get Julio Jones in check, you got the two running backs, Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman, have combined for 800 yards receiving, which is just another notch. This is a lot on the defense, it sounds like, doesn't it, when you run through all these offensive stats and names, Russ?
Yeah, they've got a lot of names there, but I'll throw you some stats out. I love stats. 52 yards they got rushing against us earlier in the season. Those two combined for less than Chris and Michael got from the same amount of carries.
Yeah, but as someone put on Twitter about Christian Michael, he's like the air's been let out of a balloon, so it's always very unpredictable. Talking of the rushing yards, the three times this season they got below 70 yards rush, 60 yards rushing, they lost against us in week 6. In week 1, they only got 52 rushing yards against the Buccaneers, and then in week 10 against the Eagles where they lost, where they just absolutely crapped a bed, for lack of a better term. But the Falcons' offense is, without doubt, one of the more efficient ones in the league. 53 touchdown drives this season. 55 drives have ended in a turnover or punt. That's far and away the best split and the closest to a 1-1-1 ratio. Dallas, at number 2, is 48 touchdowns and 67 punts and turnovers. It's just efficient beyond means. This offense can also hang on a shootout. 2-4-2 this year when allowing 30 points. The Hail Mary push-off inducing Aaron Rodgers is 0-5 when allowing his defense gives up more than 30 points. But on the other end, this is a defense with its flaws, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, you can certainly, you know, to use a UK football term, you can certainly get at them. On defense, I think I was reading today that they actually may be there or thereabouts in terms of their rushing defense with Detroit, which, if that's anything to go by, would be great. But I think there was quite a good chat on Facebook this week with regards to having long drives, and maybe having a longer drive where you don't score could be better than a shorter drive where you do score. That may not quite be the case, but I certainly think if we establish the run, we are infinitely more likely to win than not. This isn't going to be a game like against the 49ers when you can win on talent. We have to establish the run, take time off the clock, keep their offense off the field if we want to have a prayer of beating this team.
Yeah, I agree to a certain extent, but I don't think there is such a thing as scoring too fast, though, to be quite honest. I think, as I said to Ross, to go for the Lions game, it's all about scoreboard pressure in situations like this in playoffs, especially with a team, as Russ has pointed out, with a playoff record like the Falcons have.
It is the one game in the year that I would want them to not defer if they won the coin toss.
Yeah. I completely agree, especially after how they started last time in that building at this stage of the season as well. Ross, the defensive flaws?
Yeah, they're there to be got at, and the way that Rules ran last week and the way the O-line actually blocked for him, it's encouraging me. It's what's led to my high belief that we're going to win this week, that we can just control the clock and run all over them and don't have to put that much pressure on Russ to beat them. But even then, I think our receivers match up very nicely against their corners and secondary.
Yeah, it is quite a young, inexperienced defensive group, apart from Dwight Freeney. It could lead to, obviously, hot-headed mistakes, and sharp offensive work hopefully makes life a bit more interesting. One big part of that defense, though, is one of the guys who I think should be and probably will be Defensive Player of the Year, is Vic Beasley. The top 10 pick 2 years ago, he's really found his gear this year. 15.5 sacks. He's going up against Gary Gilliam this week. Is it a case of prayers and best wishes, Gaz?
Well, he's going up against Gary Gilliam and Luke Wilson, I'd assume, for the majority of this game.
Yeah.
And Nick Vanette, hopefully, as well. All of them.
Yeah, and Reece Odhiambo and Bradley Salves, all eight of them out there, just to put everyone in motion, as we
Jumbo
saw.
Package for the entire game.
Last week. It's Gary Gilliam against Vic Beasley is not something to get the nerves on a twinge, isn't it, Adam?
I haven't really noticed Vic Beasley this year for some reason. Obviously, he's the sack leader, but have they been coming in sort of chunks? Because I know that there's people like, you know, JJ Watt, who has your favourite PR machine, Stu, but maybe the Vic Beasley PR machine isn't in full swing. But if I didn't know anything stat-wise, you know, if I wasn't a stato like Ross, I would never think that Vic Beasley was the sack leader in the league.
They are coming in chunks. It took him 3 weeks to get his first sack, and he got three. Didn't get any against us the week after that. They're definitely coming in chunks against offensive lines that he can take advantage of, I assume.
But he got zero against us.
Yeah.
No, he is on a tear. It's not just the sack numbers. He's had a few fumbles as well. He's forced 8 fumbles this year. He's only managed to fall on one himself. He's had 4 pass, 6 forced fumbles even, and he's only fallen one himself. He took that in for a score as well. He's just playing a different level to what he was. I think there's a few Falcons fans who possibly were a little nervy about how he looked in his first year, but the light has certainly switched on for Beasley, and him against Gilliam is not for the faint of heart, probably. Another one on the defensive side is the first round pick this year, Keanu Neal, and he's another of those, hey, he looks like Cam Chancellor, isn't he, Adam?
Yeah, he's a banger. He's one of those players that you really like to have on your team, a tone setter. I can't remember who I was talking to. Maybe it was last week. I think it was Rob Staten in the chat we were having that, it's harder to draft for the Seahawks because teams are trying to replicate what we do. And I think Neal is a prime example of Dan Quinn taking what he'd learnt here and taking that elsewhere.
Yeah, most definitely. I think talking to Rob, Keanu Neal was someone who he had us circled for at the back end of the first round last year. So Rob definitely nailed Keanu Neal on that. Obviously, a lot of talk's been about Dan Quinn. Is his history here going to have much impact in this game, Ross?
Possibly, but I mean, Darrell Bevell likes to mix it up. We've seen he can go for drives where he gives the ball to Rawls for 10 plays in a row, and I'm not really sure what you can kind of do against that. If we keep it fresh and keep it mixed up, and I just want to see a few play-action reads this week because there was definite opportunities for it last week and Russell didn't take them.
Yeah, most definitely. And obviously, 15.5 sacks, all the fumbles Beasley's got this year, certainly suggests that he's quite aggressive at the point of attack. Mm. One member's question we had, which fits in here, is the slow starts on offence in the last few years on the road in the playoffs. What's the stat? It's 72-0 at half-time in the last two road divisional games. Is there anything to that for you, Adam?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it helps that the mantra is that you can't win a game in the first, second or third quarter. You bloody can win a game in the first and third quarter. And Carolina proved it last year. And it's about time for that nonsense to stop. I mean, it's very nice getting everyone het up when you can, you know, hold Minnesota to 7 points or whatever. But we even nearly lost that game because of a slow start. So this is the week where you've got to come out all guns blazing, because if we get into a hole, this isn't 2012 anymore. I just think that we'll end up losing badly if we fall into a hole again.
Yeah, Ross?
Yeah, that needs to be about 72-24 by the end of this first half in this week's game, I think.
For me, I think it's you take into consideration what happened. I mean, the last year was massively, massively asterisked and affected by what happened the week before when playing -400 in Minnesota off a short week. And then you fly across the country to play a top-5 defence and what was an absolutely purring offence. And also you play at like 9 o'clock in the morning for what your body clock was in Carolina. And then Falcons 4 years ago, as I said with the Falcons this year, it's just an experience. Short fields and offensive misfires really did give them a bit of a a giddy up in that first half. Two things which can't obviously happen this week.
I think you can write that Falcons game off as well, because what, a rookie quarterback in his first playoff game? Or second playoff game?
Yeah, but at the same time, you've also got a rookie quarterback doing what he did in the second half. Falcons game 4 years ago was the first time I made the trip down to the Willoughby, wherever it'll be, do the podcast for him in a few weeks, and I just kind of sat there next to Nigel, I think it was, just saying, this kid is something else. And I was quite right for once. Anything else on this game before we move on to ones to focus, Adam?
Yeah, I think I don't normally do this, but I've been sort of working out like a blueprint of how to win this game. And I think we need to win the turnover battle by 2 to win the game. I don't know what you think about that, but I think if the turnover battle is level, I think we're going to find it very, very hard to win.
Yeah, I'll probably agree with that. I think just win the turnover battle. I don't really think it matters. If you win by 1, you need to be stoutly on third down. You need to keep them out of 3rd and 5 and anything short of that with the running backs they've got. Even their fullback catches a lot of passes as well. But yeah, I think I'd agree. I think turnover battle is a stat at the end of the night you're going to look at and go, okay, that's why. Russ?
Yeah, I just think we need to make sure we don't have any busted coverages, because there's no way Levine Toilolo scoring a 46-yard untouched touchdown this week if we're all on our assignments, is there?
No, but there is also the small fact of former Husky Josh Perkins is making some noise over in Atlanta. So he's an undrafted free agent who scored a touchdown, I think, in week 16 or week 17, which is just ridiculous against Carolina.
Also, one quick more thing on Vic Beasley, his sacks. 10 of those have come away from Atlanta this year. Only 5.5 at home.
Which is weird for a defensive lineman like that. I mean, I think if you looked at Avil, I doubt it'd probably flip reverse to that, and most of his are at home, I'd hazard a guess at. One to focus on for the offense, Adam?
It's almost boring saying it every week, but Doug Baldwin is the heartbeat of this offense. If you get him involved, good things happen. And I almost like that, you know, I'm not a huge fan, and I don't think the Seahawks do it that much of sort of the scripting of the first 15 plays. But I think it was, I'm pretty sure that the first play of the game last Saturday was a 4-yard quick pass to Doug Baldwin completion. Get yourself in 2nd and 6. And I just think that Baldwin is such an asset to do that, and we need to get ourselves in 2nd and 3rds and manageable. And he's the man. I mean, it's not even the short passes. I mean, the game he had last week, I'm not sure people are giving it enough respect. It was one of the great playoff performances from a wide receiver.
I think it was one of the more impressive, like in baseball terms, closing performances. Like, he come in as a closer in the fourth quarter and caught everything with every part of his body. But yeah, one of the great playoff. Not too sure.
He had 11 catches, didn't he?
He had a 100-yard game. I don't know how many catches he had. He probably did probably have some close up. But I think in the fourth quarter,
he stole a touchdown from Jermaine Kerr, so that's obviously going to bump it up for me.
But yeah, he. I think the way he closed out was like Mariano Rivera coming on, walking on the field in Yankee Stadium to enter Sandman and all that, I think, last week. I think that is more where I'd go with how Baldwin was last week. Offense focus, Russ?
Obviously Thomas Rawls, but Jimmy Graham, aside from that, they couldn't cover him when we played him earlier in the season, and we just need to get him involved more than what the 3 or 4 catches he's had in the past couple of weeks. He needs to be a bigger part of the game plan. We said that all season long, but you saw last week that little 5-yard catch down by the end zone. He's not going to drop that. Just those quick slant routes to him every time, he'll catch them and sometimes bust them, as we've seen.
Yeah, even if you do try and kill him at the same time. But yeah, talking to Russell Wilson, I think he's the one who needs to be, me and Ross mentioned it in the review of the game last week. He wasn't, I mean, his stat line, I think he had like 6-7 completions, 250, a couple of touchdowns and all that, but he just didn't look right in the pocket. I mean, as Ross pointed out in the game review, Rodgers has a way, and he just has a little knack of just finding that extra little bit of space. And it looked like Russ's body wasn't allowing him to do that, because there was a couple of sacks where it wasn't really that the airline was bad, it just that
he's kind of wandered into the pressure, didn't he?
Yeah, he kind of just drifted into Ziggy Ansah's grass clutches and stuff. It wasn't. So I think he has to be better at that. I mean, obviously they're going to try and contain him. Dwight Freeney is one of the best to ever do it, really, at his position. So he's going to know all the tricks of the trade and stuff against a former college basketball player in George Pfaendt. But yeah, Russ has to be better this week. If Russ is second half Falcons 4 years ago, then we're in good shape with the weapons he now has on the offensive side of the ball compared to what he had back then. I mean, it's Zach Miller and Sidney Royce, and a not yet flourished Doug Baldwin as well 4 years ago. But yeah, one to focus on defense, Russ.
The Sean Shedd. We talked about Sherman shutting Jones down. He did for the most part, 40 yards on four receptions against Sherman in the previous game. They moved him around a lot to get him away from Sherman. It's on Shedd and Lane to a lesser degree too. They have to just body him up every time. He's going to get his catches, he always does. Just make sure you can stop him breaking one.
Yeah, I'd agree. Adam?
I can't split them. I think Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright as a partnership are just too important. They interviewed well this week, saying how they know their job is to stop the running backs catching passes and running. Atlanta absolutely abused Denver with that, especially with Coleman earlier in the season. And this could be the most famous of last words, but I'm not necessarily that worried about their running backs cracking off a 80-yard run like Jonathan Stewart did last year. It's them catching balls out of the backfield that really alarms me. So I think the two linebackers, assuming will be a nickel for the majority of the game, the two linebackers are going to be the difference in my opinion.
Those two between them have 297 tackles this season.
That's just ridiculous. That's ridiculous. For me on the defensive side, I think it's going to be Jeremy Lane probably, because Gabriel, I can't remember his first name, is a deep threat and he's probably going to be lined up against Lane most often. Sanu on Shedd, you'd expect, and Julio on Sherman, and mix those two up a little bit. But Gabriel could end up being like a Marcus Wheaton kind of was last season against the Steelers, where he just had exploded out of nowhere, then disintegrated back into wherever he come from. But yeah, I think Jeremy Lane has struggled this year, and I think if he has a game this week and keeps the Gabriels and the tight ends and all that, the Austin Hooper and all that quiet, then I think we'll be in good shape on defence, because you'd expect the way that Shedd played, obviously 8 pass breakups or whatever stupid it was last week, and Sherman's going to be Sherman, who's going to be tested this week with Julio and Sanu. But if those two can keep him to double digit receiving yards, then, and Lane can keep up his end of the bargain with Gabriel and all the rest of it, then we could be in good shape on the defensive side. So are you confident, Adam?
I don't know. I mean, I was almost enjoying the last month knowing we were going to go to Atlanta and get hosed. And last week was sort of giving me that disgusting level of faith in the team that actually all that's going to do is upset me further if we do get beaten on Saturday. So I've now been imbued with that level of hope that is good and annoying. And I think we're going to go and bloody win.
Bloody hell. Adam Nathan positivity hour on the Potential Podcast. Russ,
I think that is a very special moment and don't get used to it.
Russ?
Yeah, we're winning.
Cool. Okay. there is one note on, we'll go back quickly back on to the offensive side of the ball. Atlanta's Ben B on Twitter, if you don't follow him, he's got a unique Twitter handle, but if you don't follow him on Twitter, he's well worth it. He says, Atlanta's pass defense is interesting splits. They're number 9, ranked number 9 against number 1 wide receivers, number 10 against number 2s, 11th against tight ends, 29th against other wide receivers, and 26th pass defense against running backs. So if Pro Size suits up and Paul Richardson envelopes the spirit of Odell Beckham, it could be quite interesting for those two on Sunday. But yeah, for me, confident, I'm the same as Adam. I don't really want to be, but I can see myself by, 9 o'clock on Saturday night being, here we go.
I'll take a 26-24 again.
If buts and maybes, if we win, if we do this, if we do that, but if they do that, maybe we will be able to. But yeah, prediction, Russ.
Yeah, I'll take 26-24 again. That'll do me. That's what we won in the season. I'll take that again.
Yeah, Adam.
let's go for a reverse Matt Bryant, and we'll go with a field goal win for the Seahawks.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go 27-24. So yeah, same as Adam. I really. This time last week, I expected this to be like a 48-5 prediction for myself, but I just didn't see anyway. But as Adam said, with the mixture of watching Rain City on last Friday and then watching the game on Saturday, suitably sambucaed up, I will freely admit. But yeah, it's happening again. So if all goes well, it'll be on to either Dallas or back home to Centric Field to face the Packers again for the chance to represent the NFC in Houston at Super Bowl 51. That does, though, seem a long way right now.
I laid this entire path out to you a few weeks back, if you'll remember.
You definitely did. The pedestrian podcast version of Aaron Rodgers is running, will run the table, quote. If we do, next week's pod will be a glorious lap of honour, almost. But before that, time for some true or false. Russ?
Okay, I had one, but there's some breaking news that the Rams have just announced Sean McVay as the head coach. Ever heard of him?
Who the hell is that?
Exactly. He's 30 years old.
Spurs, didn't he? Northern Irish. Paul McVay.
3 years younger than me, and he's a head coach
that's
in the NFL.
Shout out for sure. He used to play for Norwich, didn't he?
So I was going to go with Deshaun Watson gets drafted by the Bears at number 3. But I'm going to change it to the Rams now finish worse than 7-9 next season with a 30-year-old rookie head coach.
How old?
30 years old. 3 years younger than me. Something's gone wrong in my life.
The sad realisation in that tone was quite funny. yeah, that's a strange one. Why? Yeah. All those names, that perfect opportunity they had there to get a big name, to get, well, probably not Harbaugh, to get a Gruden, to get a Peyton, to get someone, even get McDaniels.
Yeah.
But teams, as someone pointed out, as Falcons are really reaping the benefits because they were patient a couple of years ago and they just waited for Quinn's season to finish here. Teams need to do that because the best coaches are still coaching in the third week of January and they're just not very patient. Where's he even come from?
He just says ex-Redskins OC.
Good Christ. they're 7-9. Is that 7-9 what you said?
Yeah, less than 7-9 this year.
Yeah. That's mind-boggling. Adam?
I mean, it's true because they could have Pete Carroll, Lombardi and Bill Walsh at the same time. As long as they've got Jared Goff, they're not winning more than 4 games because he's the worst quarterback I've ever seen. So, yeah, absolutely true.
Adam, true or false?
True or false, there will be one road winner this weekend in the NFL divisional round.
False. It's going to be two.
Who you got?
NFC. NFC wins on the road. AFC wins at home.
Stu?
I think there'll be three.
Oof. The Texans. He's going big.
Brock Osweiler's not walking in there and winning, Stu. Come on. You want Sambucas already, aren't you?
I think the Steelers are going to beat the Chiefs.
Ooh.
And then obviously the two NFC teams.
Okay.
Just on that, there was a good chat on Seattle Radio this week of there are some Seahawks fans that would rather go to Dallas for the championship game than play Green Bay at home. What are you guys... I know that we shouldn't even be talking about it, but who cares?
Always set a home game.
Yeah, but I can kind of see why people would prefer to go to Dallas because... they're just a team where you go, yeah, but it's going to stop eventually. But Green Bay is just like, holy crap, kind of thing. I do get it. Obviously, you would prefer the championship game, a fully liquored up Central Field, because I think it's a later game on this next Sunday as well. Yeah. So a little bit more time for more fireballs and manis, as we said. I do get it. But yeah, I would rather a home game, obviously. Adam, what about you?
It's tricky because Jerry World is probably the worst home field advantage of any stadium in the league, well, just the way, because you could probably get, you probably have 10,000 Seahawks fans in there, knowing that the way they travel. And I guess the question is, if you, you can stop the run against Green Bay and it doesn't really matter because Rodgers can still dice you up. If you stop the run in a game like that in Dallas and Dak, you know, it's almost folly to dismiss that Dak may get pressure, but it has to happen at some point. I would take the home game because we're a better team at home than on the road. And even just like, you know, sleeping in your own bed on Saturday night helps and whatever. But I think it's a closer thing than I would have thought maybe a month ago.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree with that. Also, there is an added bonus of beating Dallas in that stadium with Jerry Jones sitting next to Chris Christie while that happens, and all the just the been front runners the whole season in the NFC pretty much, just to knock them off when every, I'll turn Skip Bayless on immediately if I was Fox Sports 1 after that, if that happens. But yeah,
they remind me of the Packers when they went on that, was it 14 win run and then lost in the playoffs a couple of years back. They're all they haven't beaten for a long time and then they just lost in the playoffs straight away.
Yeah, I can't. 14.
They were 15-1, weren't they? The Packers in that year, and they lost to the Giants.
Yeah. It was the Giants' win, wasn't it? The
Super Bowl. 2011, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. My true or false is Matt Ryan is the MVP of the league for 2016.
False. He plays quarterback for the New England Patriots.
Adam?
True. Yeah. I don't think it's close.
No, same here. I think he's been on a different sphere. He doesn't have all the suspense. If Brady played 16 games, if Brady missed four games and they'd gone 2-2, he'd be the MVP. But they basically won the division before he come back off suspension. So
yeah, but he has played for half of the season that he has played without Gronk as well. He's made people this season again.
I don't think it's a slight on Brady. I just think Matt Ryan has been absolutely brilliant, and he hasn't had a dip at any stage.
No,
and I just think sometimes you forget the name and just respect the player.
That's fair. Plus, Brady's got LeGarrette Blount, who's the leading touchdown scorer. That helps.
Yeah, which is weird because he's pretty
terrible. There's games against us and against Denver where Brady's not even tried to pass, just hands it off.
Yeah.
And I think Ryan, every game, has had an impact on his team.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. I'm in full agreement, obviously, with Adam. Yeah, as ever, with those, get involved with suggestions and topics that you want us to give the once-over on true or false. Adam just mentioned about home field advantage in Dallas. The worst home field advantage is no longer, although it might continue if they play where they seem to be playing next year. San Diego, obviously, are now the LA Chargers, which is all sorts of wrong. What are your thoughts on the move, guys?
I don't like it. I like their new symbol, but I don't like the move.
No, it's horrible. It's up there with one of the worst things about, I said to Adam earlier, it's one of the worst things about US American sports is this franchise where you can just move a team. I think someone put on Twitter earlier, since 1970 in baseball there's been one team move, in NFL there's now been nine.
Jesus.
Which is what, near, well, at one point it's what, I can't do maths, I'm that cold in this room. It's just horrible. I mean, I support a football team in England, which were moved 40 miles down the road for a season and two games, and it was just, you just lose all appetite for it. And obviously, all the brilliant videos and pictures of all the San Diego fans turning up at the facility and dumping and dropping off all their merchandise they've bought over the years. It's just awful. If you get a chance, Stephen Cohen, who writes for Seattle PI for the Seahawks beat, has wrote a really, really cool, really good article. He grew up a Chargers fan, so if you get a chance, go hunt that out, because it kind of just sums it all up. It's just, yeah.
Been in San Diego since 1961.
They're the longest tenured sports team to move, I think. Yeah. It's from my words. 55 years.
Yeah.
Adam?
I mean, I think the move is obviously appalling for anyone in San Diego, but for me, the biggest kick in the teeth is the fact they're taking the name Chargers and they're taking the color scheme with them.
Yeah.
Obviously, what happened to Seattle with the Sonics is terrible, but at least with the Thunder, it's a different team name, it's different colors, and so one day, hopefully, yes, in the not-too-distant future, the Sonics can rise again in Seattle. And, you know, you walk around Seattle, if any of you listeners have done that, and you see a lot of Sonics gear, and people are still proud to wear the green and gold, and they'll wear the colors, because there's always the hope that one day, the Sonics will be back in Seattle. This way, the Chargers are now gone from San Diego, and if I was a Chargers fan, that would just be like an extra kick in the teeth, in addition to losing my team. I definitely can't ever have them back.
Yeah, that is the thing. It happened with the Colts all those years ago when they moved to Indianapolis. Well, obviously, the Colts' whole name changed, and when the Ravens come back, it wasn't. I mean, the Ravens is a 30-for-30 on the marching band for the Colts, Baltimore Colts. They had the CFL team. They won the CFL championship. The Canadian Football League championship, the Baltimore team won. while the Colts were there. It's just, yeah, that is... Is that completely final that they're taking the Chargers name?
I think it is, yeah. Browns... The name Browns stayed in Cleveland, isn't it? And funny, yeah, maybe completely cursed. They might want to sack that off altogether. But I just think, you know, let the team have a chance to come again, because this is really bad.
Yeah, most definitely. It is pretty sad. Next week, we'll probably be bringing you a podcast as well as another podcast film room, where we'll have a ganders this time at the defensive side of the ball for Seattle. Where can people get all that goodness anyway, Ross, and help this podcast stay active and going?
Well, follow us during game days and all other days on Twitter at SeahawkersUK. You can find us on Podbean at thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. And if you want to become a patron of ours and help us to keep the podcast going and get yourself some pretty cool rewards and follow our betting tips, you would have won £32 last week if you'd followed mine. Then head over to the patreon.com/thepedestrianpodcast, and there's various levels of sign up there. The best one being the $5 level, because then you get an extra podcast every week.
Yeah, massive thanks to every comment and every bit of feedback on last week's hectic content-filled week. I think I can talk for the other two, where we're quite proud of the podcast and the two interviews with Richard Graves and Rob Staten we did last week. Moving on to off-season, hopefully not just yet. We'll look to keep bringing you all of that. But yeah, to wrap up, a massive thanks to Will for joining us all the way from the West Coast of the US of A and talking Seahawks and his Rain City series. To everyone who has listened and got involved with questions and topics. Until next time, if this is the last game preview of the season we do, there's only one phrase to end on.
Do I not like that?
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champion.
What I do like is Sean McVay was only 9 years old during Jeff Fisher's first 7-9 NFL season.
That's amazing. a trade of field goal, a goal. Oh, God, my mouth. Also, I'm in my brother's room and his window broke open, so it's open constantly. It's freezing.
I bet. Yeah, it's snowing, isn't it?
right, I'll try again. All right.